guilty to deep.
Call our resources committee meeting to order for Wednesday, February 23rd. 3:03. For the record, we have Representative Schultz, Representative Larson, Representative Gall, Representative Liska, Representative Cowdery, Representative Ewing, Representative Brinkstad. Before us today, we've got two bills, HB 130 and HB 167, both of them being homestead bills. The intention today is to just have the first round of testimony. I'm sure we'll wind up having several. We'll probably have some teleconferences and several hearings on these bills. Today, we want to get in and give a chance for the prime sponsors of both the House bills to testify and explain their bills. We hopefully will also have the sponsors, the drafters of a couple of the other bills. There are two homestead bills in on the Senate side, and they can be here to give us some of the insight from their point of view too. Basically, we're not intending to debate the bills today, discuss the bills today, or anything. Just take the testimony and get the explanation of the first go-around on the bills. HB 130, the first bill we have up, Representative Ewing is the prime sponsor and done most of the work on that one, so I think we'll let you start off and go from there. Before you get started there, Rick, if there's anybody in the audience that also would like to testify on bills, I'd appreciate it if you'd sign up on our sign-up sheets there. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, today I'm pleased to take the opportunity to testify on behalf of House Bill 130 relating to homestead entry. Obviously, the concept behind my bill is not a new one. In the last session, HB 2, introduced by Representatives Byrne and Bettesworth, passed the House of Representatives after the House Resources Committee had successfully formulated a strong committee substitute. Passing the House by a substantial margin of 37-2, HB 2 died in Senate rules because it was burdened with, I believe, several unrelated amendments. However, the ideal of homesteading lives on, and Alaskans from every corner of our state are calling for greater availability of state land for private ownership. I encourage you as responsible representatives to give those citizens the type of program I propose. HB 130 allows homestead entry under the existing land disposal programs and does not require the creation of a whole new mechanism. Mr. Chairman, the bill before you is an effective method of getting more land out to the people. It utilizes our current statutory vehicles, specifically 3805-057 disposal of land by lottery and 3805-077 classification disposal of remote parcels. So it uses the existing laws that we have now on the books and integrates those laws to make an effective program that comes forth. Our state is rich with abundant land, land that can and should be developed in order to meet the growing needs of our citizens. My concern is that we must get more land out to the people. I believe that's been the consensus with the four bills that have been introduced, two on the Senate, two on the House side. Obviously, there's a concern there. Obviously, it has to come before a public hearing, and I think the people are speaking out on that. Anyway, the idea is to get more land out to the people, and that's exactly what 130 does. We in Alaska have a long and respected tradition of sharing our abundance with all our citizens, the same honored tradition that helped settle our nation and make it rich and strong. A lot of Anchorage was settled by homestead, and I want that same tradition, that same ideal and dream to be carried forward today. And in this bill, I believe we have those dreams and those ideals which are going to be carried forth, getting that land out to the people, considering the tremendous amount of land that's in the hands of the state of Alaska right now. In that spirit, I urge your full and favorable consideration of HB 130. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I would be glad to take any specific questions you might have. I have a pretty thorough knowledge of exactly what this particular bill does, and I can put that in a synopsis for you immediately if you want me to.
Go ahead.
Okay. Basically, what it does, it sets up a new section. The homestead program would be under two sections, the remote parcel section and the lottery section. It gets out land in increments under the remote parcel section of the law in 160-acre increments, and then under the auction program, or it gets it out in 320-acre amounts. There is a qualification when people do take a homestead entry permit, and that is if they occupy the land for a total of 35 months, erect a habitable dwelling, which is approximately 200 square feet, so we just don't have somebody that's just putting an outhouse or something out on a piece of property. So the whole concept is to get the land out to the people in an equitable manner and to have a sweat equity concept involved in the program. Not just to have another giveaway like we've given away so many other things in our programs. And this is one method of getting the land out. It also requires cultivation of the land, requires them not only to build a habitable dwelling, but it also requires one-fourth of the land that would have to go and be cleared. That's approximately 20 acres, 160. Also requires the brushing of boundaries, and it also causes that a survey would have to be made on it. Perhaps one of the differences in this bill versus other bills that have been introduced is the fact that it does not allow for an agricultural revolving loan fund to take an effect on the homesteading idea. My main concept behind that particular idea is that I think it's a sweat equity kind of position that we need to take, and the people need to get out and work that land, and by fulfilling the requirement of being on the land for that 35 months or 7 years, or it could be up to, let's say, 5 months, a larger amount of time in a shorter period, would allow them to work the land, and they would not be eligible for that agricultural revolving loan fund. But the concept is not just to allow them to utilize all of the other loan programs that are within the state of Alaska. The idea is for them to work it and do it from that standpoint. And I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions of the witness? Representative Larson.
Yes, Representative Ewing, I just have one general question. It's a concern that has become more and more important, I think, in recent years, and that's the preservation of agricultural land. Within your bill, once the person obtained title to the 160 acres of land, would you conceive that there would be any restriction then to retaining
Absolutely
that land
not.
In agriculture or
no problem.
Any future multiple use?
Not to my knowledge. I think that basically the whole idea is when they fulfill the requirements of working the land, doing the work on it, then after that point there are no restrictions and they would be able to apply for an agriculture revolving loan fund.
I guess my question though, are you conveying just the ag rights, or are you conveying that once the land is in the hands of the individual, that they could then take it out of agriculture, subdivide it, sell it off, or recreation sites or
I believe
sites,
there's no constraints, to my knowledge, on it after it's conveyed, patent is received. Dick Bradley from Legislative Affairs drafting this here.
I might note for the record, both Representative Baska and Representative Bussell are
not here.
Question?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cowdery?
Yeah, thank you. You mentioned clearing requirements in some of your testimony and that's in this bill. I have been in the early days of some involved in some homesteading in the Anchorage area. Some of the clearing requirements in that particular instance wasn't really a practical thing. It was a requirement, but it wasn't farmland, particularly. And I was wondering if any consideration on the practicability of the clearing had been given to.
I believe there has been some consideration on that. in the bill under page 2, under A and B, we talk about a quarter of the land which would be cleared and cultivated if it was limited to agricultural use. However, if it is land that is not limited to agricultural use, it would be an eighth of the land. So let's say on 160 acres, that would be something like 20 acres would have to be cleared if it was agricultural land, and substantially about half of that amount if it was not ag land.
The clearing of it, would it be cultivated too? I mean,
It would be clears and prepares for cultivation. There's always a question in there if that's actually turning the soil over or not. I think in the governor's bill, to give you an example, I think it's a little bit more specific. They require you actually to turn the soil, but I think, I guess from a legal standpoint, I'd have to defer to what exactly prepare would mean.
Let me ask a little more general question on that. Is it your intent to make homesteading an agricultural program?
Well,
as such, are we limiting so that you have to be able to prepare and theoretically get into farming to homestead?
This is certainly the strong opinion. Yes, of myself.
Representative Larson.
Two questions, I think, kind of in relation to what I said a little bit before. Where it says clear and prepare for cultivation, I don't see anything within the requirement, say, of harvesting a crop. You see, cultivating or preparing for it. And I don't necessarily disagree with that. In fact, I'm kind of wondering if we're going to be having homesteads or home sites for other than for agriculture, why does there have to be any clearing at all if it's for a site other than for agriculture purposes?
I think the intent was that originally it was for agricultural use and to use it in that sense, and then therefore there would be the whole idea was the small cottage type farms, and going from that standpoint, letting someone develop this small little industry in this kind of situation, agriculture.
Representative Carter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I think that following up on Representative Larson, there were certain, at least in the 50s, in the homestead that the sweat was in it, but the of homesteading, however, the practicability of clearing the acreage, in fact, in most instances, I don't think it personally directed the proper environmental respect just because it was no practical reason why the clearing was done. And some of the, I know there was awful wide roads that went into the cabin site and was used as clearing requirements. And this is why I'm interested in, if it's not necessary, Why take the trees down? This is the point that may be addressed later as an amendment, or
I think that, Mr. Chairman, if I might add, that I think that the main idea was that the original intent of the idea of homesteading was to create a small cottage industry or agricultural farm kind of situation, and the development of that idea. And I think what I'm hearing from the committee is that possibly that requirement is not necessary. The whole idea is that there should be some set of requirements that would be needed for those people to be on the land and to work it, so that we aren't just giving the land away. And I think that possibly there'd be a possibility of the committee coming up with another particular option on that. There's no other bill that has other different requirements. I mean, it's all based around sort of the agriculture idea, from what I understand.
Representative Gull.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When I first came to the state, it was the year after the Homesteading Act ceased to exist, and I remain sentimental about homesteading, and I think it's a nice idea, but the pressure on real estate today is quite excessive compared to what it was even 10 years ago. I'm concerned that possibly, especially given Mr. Cowdery's comments and others, that maybe 160 acres, although it was reasonable during an earlier period, may be an excessive amount of acreage under this program, given the demand for real estate. Can you justify such a large parcel of land being distributed in this fashion?
I think I can. I think that people's interest and intent is to get land of that size into their hands. I think they're interested in it. I think it's easier to, from a survey standpoint, to be able to survey quarter sections and so on and so forth, and I think that's why we've come up with 160 acre parcels. Let me also add that, as I recall last year in HB2, which did pass the House, there was a change in the amount of the size. It was limited down to less than 160 in an amendment form, which did fail on the Senate side. So there was some interest in changing the gross acreage from 160 acres. So that certainly is something that can be looked at. I just know from a format standpoint and from a surveying standpoint that 160 acres is a little bit easier to work with.
Thank you.
Any other questions of the witness on the concept of this one?
I just like to clear up that I didn't want to imply that I was against it.
No,
I co-sponsored this bill with you, but it was just that the clearing aspect of it, and I still believe the 160 acres for the reasons of access should be available. You get smaller than that, and access sometimes becomes a problem without more involvement by the state or something part right away. So I just wanted to clear that up.
With no other questions, why don't we go on and have Representative Tischer testify and go through the rest of them. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Tischer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mae Tischer, and I'm a representative from in our Turnagain area. And my bill is House Bill 167. Sorry. I heard some comments earlier in previous testimony that I'd like to address, because first of all, I thought that when I talked to you, John, we're going to be talking about philosophical things, and I'd like to start out with that, but I want
to
continue on with
that. Yes, that would be our preference rather than get into a lot of detail and go through the philosophical part of homesteading first and get the generalities down first.
Well, I want to start with that first, if you will, and if I may then delve into some of the other things that were mentioned, perhaps that I'd like to touch upon, if I can recall them all. On philosophies, first of all, for those of you who do not know, I actually came to Alaska with my five children to homestead and did in fact do that from 1961 to 1964 in the Susitna Valley. And I'll go into the experience later on if you're interested. But the philosophy behind homesteading and the reason that my bill differs so much from any of the other bills that have been so far submitted, including those on the Senate side, and you will have in front of you for your observation and review a comparison, if you will, on the different types of issues that each bill deals with, so that you have a comparison. The philosophy behind my bill is simply this, that it is my opinion and most opinions that I have talked with as far as folks who would like to have some land, and those who, if you will, live the American dream, is that governments at any level should not be the sole owner of land that is not already dedicated for parks, monuments, and such as those things. That the Constitution of the United States provides for the government to own certain types of land for preservation purposes, if you will, and also preservation not only of the land but also of our wildlife and fish and so forth. But the basic fundamental reason why our country was established is so that individuals could own land and prosper by that ownership. You do not own land if you only own agricultural rights. You own the rights to use that land for agricultural purposes or what other designation that may have been initiated. But you do not own that land, you do not hold clear title to that land. And if there is a differentiation, it really is basically that. In effect, when I homesteaded, if I had homesteaded 5 years prior to that time on federal lands, I would have had clear title to the property that I now have partial title to. I only own the surface use of that land. I do not own the subsurface anywhere further down than wherever they decided that subsurface begins. And so I was forced, before I could place an entry claim on that property, to sign away those mineral rights that are subsurface. Now, the United States government provided that people must sign that provision before they would have a notice of allowance to enter onto that land and take up the homesteading process. Prior to a date which I do not have at the time, but I presume it's before 1957 here in Alaska, all the other states of the United States and their distribution of land and their claims, the individuals claiming land, had the right to claim that land in total. And therefore, when Alaska became a state and the government found that there were riches and resources here, the provision was made in order that the government own those resources rather than the individual who owns the land or could own the land, such as you have in Texas and Louisiana and other oil and other resource producing states. You don't find the coal mines in the East owned by the government. You find that they are owned by companies or individuals that have formed companies, and they reap the benefits. And that is what I call pure, unadulterated free enterprise, if you will, and pure, unadulterated ownership of land. Whatever use of the land is to be made should be up to the individual who owns that land rather than at the dictates of the government. So I guess I'm professing some free enterprise, private enterprise issues in my bill as far as land ownership is concerned. The best use of the land cannot always be determined by another party removed from the land, if you will, that being the government. Private use of that land is best determined by the individual, in my estimation, in my opinion, by the individual who owns that land or has access to that land. So, in effect, if that land is not conducive, or the geographic location, or the weather, or other things are not conducive to a certain use, that they may have the freedom then to make the best use of that land that they see in order to prosper with themselves and their family. Under common ownership, if you will, the economic method for individuals to benefit is to exploit the resources as quickly as possible before somebody else has a chance to do that. Under private ownership, there is no such pressure. An owner then will be concerned about the property's long-term value, and he will maintain that. I think that holds true in history, and I think you can demonstrate that by our history books. Lack of good land, for whatever purpose you deem it, is available from state for private ownership. However, you'll find that the state is letting out for sale, if you will, or lottery sale, or a combination of it, to dispose of certain lands. What is left under the existing system of things, if you remove commercial, if you remove industrial, and remove other types of lands that are indicated, you have nothing but, in many, many eyes, a valueless piece of property. And there is no no interest in acquiring ownership of that land. It is my feeling that the state of Alaska who has had and received patent to over 22.1 million acres, and with another, I believe, 44.3 million acres tentatively approved for state ownership, should put that land out in total for private ownership, whereby not only will the government benefit, but also the individual who claims that land and parcels that are adequate for either sustenance or just plain ownership. Because local governments then will have a tax base, if you will, on land that is privately owned, whereas public-owned land certainly doesn't receive a financial return in terms of taxes. And the individual will have the ability to make the best use of that land that he sees that he can do. The provisions of my bill do that. It is a very simple, very common language bill that turns public lands into private ownership. I follow Mr. Ewing's thought on sweat equity. My bill compares very closely to that. Proving up, meaning allows the applicant to show serious intent of the ownership of that land by an application fee, which is, I suggest, reasonable, and that it requires for building a habitable dwelling, which is reasonable, and that they are required to live on the property, which also is reasonable. Therefore, showing good intentions rather than speculation, if you will. Let's talk a little bit perhaps about the agricultural provision, which comes up in all other three bills. And I'd like to share with you an experience that I had in homesteading, and one of the reasons why you do not find that in my bill. The Susitna Valley is a rich soil, gentle terrain area for the most part. And so, being a farmer since I was born, raised on a farm, raised my children until I came to Alaska on a farm, so thereby I think that although I'm not an expert at it, I think I have a common knowledge of the needs that is required for growing crops, if you will. Agriculture usually means growing crops in the ground, grain of some sort and so forth. We were required to clear X number of percent of the number of acres that we were homesteading. And so we did that. And we were also required to plant a crop. And for review and inspection by the BLM, that crop had to be a growing in the ground crop before they would come out and look and give you your patent. And so we did do that. We cleaned 14 acres of good fertile land with lots of good birch trees on it. We piled up the trees in the corner and along the center called a burn pile that we later were unable to remove or burn. And so we had 14 acres plus cleared of good virgin timber, if you will, in order to plant that crop. We lost a natural resource, number one. The trees were knocked down and they were piled up, and we weren't able to use it for anything else. Two, the crop that we put in was that which was recommended by the experimental farm in Palmer. The crop matured to almost maturity before snow came, therefore we weren't able to harvest. And I submit to you, gentlemen, that in most parts of Alaska, the type of grain farming that is today, today's technology and so forth, is going to be an unsuccessful boondoggle, if you will. And clearing the land for the purpose of agriculture at the present time outside of the Matanuska Valley, which has different circumstances involved, and I think it's unique, if you will. And I question even the Delta Barley Project, because I've seen pictures of the combines out there, combine when snow's falling, or half, 2 or 3 feet deep in the ground, on the ground. I submit to you that caution should be observed when you are considering a homestead bill or distribution and disposal of land exclusively for agriculture use, because you're going to lose something. The first thing you're going to lose is all those trees. I don't think that we can afford just to dump those trees and forget that we ever had them, because the regrowth will take 40 to 50 years and then some. Ours has been vacant now for approximately 21 years, and we still have brush growing, and so we've lost that natural resource for a good long time. The other thing is that with agriculture, unless technology can be improved to allow for a shorter growing season in most of the Alaska land area, you will find unsuccessful efforts being made to literally grow a crop, because that's what you have to do as a requirement in order to have ownership, or partial ownership, if you will, agricultural rights, if you will, to that land. And you will find that if that's going to be a requirement, as in some places, and I believe the Matsu Valley, Matsu Borough does this, they set out an allotment of agriculture land, you present a plan for agriculture, and within a given length of time, and you must use that land for agriculture. If you are unsuccessful, there's a buying proposition here now, it's not a giveaway. If you're unsuccessful over a period of time, you're going to go broke, and the land reverts back to the nearest governmental system, I think. And I think that is taking advantage of the individual who is trying very hard to make efforts to own a piece of land that cannot make it because the requirements are not appropriate for that area. So my bill does not include agricultural use. It includes more, if you will, the initiative of the individual to make the best use of the land. Did I miss anything?
Let me run down a couple of points here, just so I make sure I'm understanding where you're, what generally you're saying. On the agricultural rights, you prefer to not require them.
Yes, I prefer not to.
I guess the overall theme of what you're putting in there is saying that the individual is the best of the, as opposed to government, will best determine the use of the land. So then by putting agricultural rights or any other kind of restrictions on it, the government is making that decision. Is that what?
I'll give you an example. For example, it would be just as ridiculous in my eyes to homestead up north of Barrow, 160 acres for a chicken ranch. Chickens would never make it up here unless they were housed inside, and the expense would be far too great in terms of a homestead, if you will, or a range of cattle, for example. I've got a lot more common sense than the normal bureaucrat that sits behind a desk in Washington, D.C., let's say, and designates the best use of land. The other thing is that I can fail or succeed on my own merits. If I decide that I can make that land useful in agriculture or growing berries or chicken ranch or what have you, then it is my decision, and you will find that I will probably make every effort to succeed in that decision. But I would have reasonable doubt, if that decision were made for me, that it be applied to all areas of this huge state where there is so many different geographic problems, elevations and soil combinations and geographic location and all the other things, weather and what have you.
You had mentioned early on in your testimony about subsurface rights, that other states or all granted the subsurface rights.
No, they weren't granted, if you excuse me. They were there with the land.
It was a package. In Alaska, we have not been given that.
Actually, it was taken away.
Your bill does not provide those, but it would be your preference to do that?
My bill does not address that because there is an existing law that prevents this this bill to supersede that, and so I did not address that issue. At this point in time, if this bill were to pass, the present subsurface law would prevail.
I'm assuming you're speaking of the federal law.
Federal,
no.
State, or any.
Excuse me.
It's the state law here.
State law.
And federal. It depends on if you're on federal lands, you have to sign that you're subsurface right.
Well, what I'm getting at is there's a. You would prefer that we have subsurface rights go with surface rights.
You bet. I sure would.
But it's not. We can't do it with this single piece of legislation.
That's correct.
Okay. Representative, did you have your hand up for a minute ago?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh. Okay, Representative Cowdery.
Yes. Representative Tish here. You know, as I recall back on getting into the clearing requirements, I recall back in the 50s, they had situations out where veteran preference was waived of clearing requirements versus non-veterans. And I don't recall that, I mean, the point I'm, the ones that cleared the land I don't recall any benefit to the community by the clearing.
You're right.
And except a garden or things of that nature, which had no effect on the law.
True.
But anyway, I was wondering if any thought had been to any kind of a preference that could be given to this, similar to that.
Mr. Chairman? May I ask that? I think I'm going to ask this correctly. My bill provides for a minimal amount of clearing, and I have identified that so that it would satisfy those who feel as though clearing is a necessity just by out of sheer sweat equity. The clearing that I list in here would include the home site, your garden site, and the other clearing that you would normally have to do to prepare yourself to live on the land. So the acreage would involve those, or the requirement would involve those acres, so that indeed you wouldn't have to go aside from your home site or aside from your garden site and clear away trees that were not necessarily important to you.
Representative Larson?
Yeah, if I may be allowed a little leeway here, I have a couple of comments in relation. I think it'll help clarify some things. Representative Tischer is right. Under the old federal homestead law, that the subsurface rights as well as the surface rights were obtainable until 1957, I believe. And after that, they were no longer. The state never did allow the subsurface rights to surface under its program. In relation to the Matanuska Pacific Borough, the borough law, which was referred to, states basically that if, I think it's 60 or 70% of the land has class 2 and 3 soils. Now, in order to be 2 or 3 soils, there are many restrictions that land would have to meet. Then that land can only be disposed of if it's borough land for agricultural purposes. So when the Matanuska Susitna Borough does conduct an agricultural land sale, it is only on lands that have been classified class 2 Class 3, and then the sale takes place on the following premise. First of all, the assessors will go out and assess the true value of the land. You see, the true value of the land is $1,000 an acre. That land will then be put up for sale at $100 per acre. In other words, at 10% of its value. And the bidding on the outcry bidding method will start from there. And the person only purchases, as Representative Tischer stated, the agricultural rights to that land. If, in case they do not meet the other requirements of their farm plan and so forth, the land then would revert back to the borough. The point I'm trying to make is that the people who
do the bidding know that they're only bidding on agricultural rights and that the bidding starts at 10% of the value of the land, not the full value of the land. I do agree with Representative Tischer's point that we need to have some type of homestead or home site land or something else for other than agricultural purposes. I think the people have clearly defined that on many occasions, and I think as Representative Tischer stated, there are many areas in Alaska that just are not conducive to agriculture or farming of any type, but yet there is a need to get lands into the hands of the people. I guess what I'm really concerned about in any of these bills and in past policies of state land disposals and even some borough land disposals, that we haven't been meeting the needs of the people because the land we've been getting out to the people, for one reason or another, is not necessarily, quote unquote, the best lands in the area. That much of the best lands, I know in the Matanuska-Susitna Borough and elsewhere, still belong to the state, they still belong to the Matanuska-Susitna Borough. And in many ways, the bills that we have before us now will not address the concern of getting the best land out to the people, not even land that's accessible. And that's a big problem. We can get people 160 acres of land, but if they can't get to it, it's not going to be any good. If they don't have enough timber on it so that they can at least cut their own firewood to support their inhabitable dwelling, it's not going to be any good. So this is a multiple of concerns that I have, and I hope somehow within these bills we can satisfy some of those. And I think the two bills we have before us today both have some good points, but we're also going to have to see what we can do to make them even better.
Thank you. I'd like to try and keep the questions. The witness, we've got a couple more people to try and testify here.
Thank you.
Representative Liskin.
Mr. Chairman, I would just like to reflect Representative Tischer's point here as why we cannot own subsurface rights.
Well, let's get the questions through first so we get all the witnesses to testify first and we can discuss
later. I'd
like
to clarify stuff with the way, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Under the Alaska Statehood Act, under Section I, that's how we got the Statehood Act. That took all the mineral rights away from any land. Any homestead bill that would come before us now will not have them. That's the law of the land.
Representative Schultz, did you have a question there?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not necessarily a question. I think that being from the Delta area, I just have to make one comment, and that is that I have had the opportunity to see the combines on a beautiful, beautiful Indian summer day harvesting the golden grain when the colors in the mountains and the valleys were changing. It was very spectacular.
Which year was that, Representative?